Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Wednesday and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. Today is June 10th, 2015. I'm Michelle Pache, filling in for Jeannie, and I warmly welcome you to the show. We're here today with Dr. Michael Rice, the Forgiveness Doctor. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, making this your show. So now let's welcome Michael in the process of learning and practicing Aramaic forgiveness. Michael, we can't hear you yet.
Okay, listen. Is that any better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Oh, good. Okay. My headset wasn't fully plugged in, so. Anyway, I was thanking you for being willing to take over the switchboard today so that Jeannie could get some errands done as we are prepping to hit the road for Theodosia, Missouri. Not sure exactly when that will happen, but sometime in the next few days. And we appreciate everybody that chooses to join us every day that you do choose to join us to bring these tools and these principles into the global marketplace, where if we have our way, in very short order, with critical mass being reached, we'll be having every mind on the planet, every heart on the planet, every being on the planet, understanding that forgiveness is an internal process, a process that each person can engage in and literally, totally, whatever's going on in the world, free themselves from pain. If they're willing to face their pain and allow their pain to come up and be honest and true with themselves, with the issues that that they need to move through. And I, for one, certainly appreciate this community and this awesome presence of love. You know, one of the pieces of the puzzle that goes along with this work is understanding that everything that we do with our perceptual minds creates an energy that we quite literally spray on ourselves and each other. And that we're creating this community of love. And one of the things we know about energies, especially high energy waves, is that there's nothing that can stop a high energy wave except another set of brain cells that's in tune with it. And so here we are with people from all over the globe who are doing the work of living and perceiving through the active presence of love, which means that as we do that, we spray an energy, not only on our own cellular structures, but on each other, that is supportive of the healing process and supportive of each person presencing his love. Several years ago, we started a school program called Lessons in Living at Unity in Delray Beach, Florida. And the first lesson we took in and taught to the kids was, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. When I select love, I literally perceive through an energetic pattern that radiates from me a literal, measurable, high-energy wave that becomes available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And so it's pretty awesome to have all these folks from all over the globe just being here to hold the space. And In particular, I'm appreciative of the space that was held for me yesterday as some layers came up in me during the show and opened a space to look at some support issues that that I had as being supported in this work, and how Terry Bowling had opened that as he just jumped in when we were in Asheville in Flat Rock, North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina as well, last week. And he was just there with such huge support. And as I acknowledged that and cut into that conversation, just opened a huge, huge piece of grief for me. And so thank you for everybody for holding that space. And it kind of connects in with several things. And one of the things I've been working on recently, I've shared before on the show that one of my issues has been that of processing through foot problems. When I was a kid, I regularly had sprained ankles, and it became kind of a joke. I love to hang out at construction sites, and so it became a joke that the family would, oh, here comes Michael dragging a board with a nail in his foot. And so that's something I've been processing through with my foot in the last few days, and going back and dealing with my grandmother, who had an alcoholic husband and a pretty unhappy home. And as an older woman, I watched her, my grandmother, who was, I was her favorite, I think, and she was certainly my favorite. Of all the kids in our family, I'm the only one who'd go spend the night, and anytime I got a chance, I'd go be with Grandma. But I got to watch them take off one toe, two toes, three toes, four toes, eight toes, 10 toes, half a foot on one foot, half a foot on the other, an ankle on the left, an ankle on the right, up to the knee on the left and the right before she died. And somebody could hit a mute button there if you would. It's a little noisy. And then processing, you know, watching my mom and not realizing what kind of pain she went through with distortions in her feet. So just been, you know, surfacing and moving through those issues, and experiencing a major healing crisis in my foot the last few days. And of course, feet have to do with support. And so that just sort of opened the whole gamut up. And, you know, so things are moving nicely. And I just share that and invite everybody, if you would, to just hold the space for me for the next layer. Like, I'm ready to be finished with this issue. I'm ready to get to the other side of it totally, completely, to be vitalized fully. And of course, one of the benefits of having a group of people who are spraying support energy on you and spraying love on you is it increases your vitality, so that issues that you couldn't possibly get through on your own, when you've got all that joining and support, vitality elevates the capacity to reach into depth of one's own stuff, so to speak, and move through it. So mucho, mucho gracias, and that's what we're here to do for every mind, heart, and being on the planet, to open those spaces and to bring forward that true human life and move out the blocks for anything that would inhibit its expression. Of course, moving out the blocks that would inhibit the expression of human life is called forgiveness. Forgiveness meaning remove, not meaning let somebody off the hook. And human life, if you hold a newborn child, you know what a human life is. So if there's anything in your life that inhibits you from functioning truly, fully as love, maybe it's yesterday's relationship. Maybe it's, you know, 20 years ago, the abuse. Maybe it's 50 years ago, the power person dynamic. Doesn't matter what it is. It's all energy. You're not physical. You're an energetic being. What needs to open, what needs to be processed through, what needs to be released. And that's what we're here to support and be supported in. So we appreciate each person who participates in that. Dr. Tim with us today, Michelle?
Yes, he's here.
Well, let's say hello to the young man, see if he's got anything exciting happening in his world.
What I was going to share has to do directly with what you've talked about in a theme, and that is that we had our group last night, and again, it's just beyond words how wonderful and loving that group is. And yet, What happens when people are willing to look at the stuff in them that's less than love is they get to feel it fully.
Yeah.
And so it's a painful process for a lot of people to go back and look at things they've been hiding from themselves and running from. And we had one of our more courageous people look at an issue last night that she's been blocked off from for a lot of years. And, you know, she just gave us a fabulous example of willingness to bump into what looked to be too powerful, too terrifying, too fearful, too painful. And so my hat's off to that group of 14 people who were there to support her and to her for being an example of courage and love and strength. And to you, Dr. Rice and Jeannie and the rest of the team that help us make these tools available, because without these tools, it would be just reliving old pain in a loop that's never ending. And I've had a lot of people over the years ask me, why would I want to go back and look at that? And my only answer is to get rid of it. And then they would say, well, I can't get rid of it. I've been back and visited it hundreds and thousands of times, and it's just horrible, and that's why I'm using my drug of choice, whatever it might be, to distract myself or numb myself out so I don't have to go experience it. And it's a real hard sell for some people, especially if they've never had the tools. It's a really hard sell to get them to understand that in the presence of love and with the proper tools, they could go back and experience it one more time for the last time. They can break that cycle. And fortunately, there are a couple support groups going in this area that are holding the space for people to learn that lesson firsthand, that it is absolutely possible to face and dismantle the things that I have been running from and that have terrorized me sometimes for decades. So my thanks to everybody who attends that group, and my appreciation to you and Jeannie and everybody else who makes these tools available, and that's my offering for today.
Cool. Fabulous. It is definitely a process, this opening and awakening and working through whatever energetic issues are in our genetics, or in our physiology, in our emotions, and moving through to the other side. It's powerful. Powerful, sweet. So, Michelle, any thoughts from you before we check on callers and the chat room?
I am just enjoying a peaceful week, feeling like there's reverberations from the energy this weekend. I've been juicing. I hit the Asheville Farmers Market on the way home and loaded my truck with all kinds of fresh fruits and vegetables that aren't quite in season yet in Michigan, and so I've been a raw fool this week. And I like
cool.
It. I think the catalyst was this weekend. It just, there's a synergy, whether you raise your vitality through worksheets, through a breathing session, through the food, but it kind of ripples and impacts the other ones as well. So I feel feeling really alive this week. We had a very nice support group last night. I got processed pieces, and it was good.
Awesome. Yeah, and of course that other big vitality elevator is community. You know, in the ancient Aramaic, where they talked about this nebulous thing called the kingdom of God that was somewhere out in space in English, those words would be more properly translated as the community of love. And when community comes together to work together, whether it's through this radio show or whether we do it in person or over the phone with each other, definitely empowering and definitely moves forward. And Terry was an inspiration. He shared a couple of his juices. He's created some really nice recipes. He had an apple, turmeric, lemon, ginger juice that he shared with me on Sunday, and it was pretty awesome. Terry is, he was on the show, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, and he'd been doing juicing in the morning and at night on top of his regular dietary regimen, just changed one habit in his life and shifted out juicing first thing in the morning and in the evening, and decreased his the weight of his instrument by about 60 pounds, which is pretty incredible. Nice work, Terry. So anything exciting happening in the chat room, or anybody with a phone up in the hand, or a hand up in the phone queue, a phone up in the hand queue. Right, there you go.
Right now, all quiet on all fronts.
Okay. Well, we'll just invite you. There's lots of time. You know, we have certain people, well, they will remain unnamed, who usually wait until about the last minute and a half, and then go, oh, I had a question, but now I don't have time to ask it. So we'll invite you to put your hand up now. Well, we've got lots of time. You got a hand there?
Yeah, Terry popped his hand up. Hi, Terry.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, it's rocking, sir.
Good.
How about you?
Yeah. Wonderful. Beautiful day.
Jeannie.
Just got off got the information. I think Jeannie has it. Has she passed it on yet?
Well, I know that she sent the email. We talked about it last night about 10 o'clock, and we didn't have the information for Flat Rock or for Henderson yet. So she went ahead and sent out the flyer with your contact information and the information for tonight's support group at Dr. Rich's office in Asheville, and just put in a note to contact you about the final details. Otherwise, it would have been too late. And people tend to get overloaded with emails if we send too many. So we decided to do it in one and go ahead. And I think it was about probably, 10:30, 11:30 last night when she finally got it off. But it's out there in people's hands, and people should be contacting you who want to join you down in Henderson.
Yes, I got a couple responses back already. And then I heard from Reverend Charlotte up at the Namaste Center, and they're opening up a space on Tuesday night there.
Cool. So
at 7 o'clock. So that's on the board. Jeannie has that information, and I thought we'd get it out on the radio show here too. Well, since we got it.
So 7 o'clock. What night?
Tuesday night.
7 o'clock Tuesday night, and that's going to be at what location, Henderson?
They have their Namaste Center, which is a space they have downtown, which I haven't visited yet. She said it was 707 Brooklyn. So we'll get the confirmation on all that. Yeah.
Okay, so 707 Brooklyn, Tuesday night, you'll be there doing Mindshifter Support Group. And then tonight, you're starting the first group at Dr. Rich's office in Asheville. Do you have the address offhand for that, Terry? I don't have it right here. Yes, I do. It's I think it's number one, Kenilworth Knowles.
Yeah.
One Kenilworth Knowles in Asheville is where Dr. Rich's office is. And when you come off of the highway, that's just a short street, if you look up the hill, you can see his building, and he's up on the second story. So, cool.
Yeah, that's right off Tunnel Road, just above O'Charlie's Restaurant. Most people know where that landmark is.
Yes. Fabulous. Well, we'll be excited to hear how the support group goes tonight, and then keep track of how things are moving in Henderson. Anything else exciting in your world today?
Lots of opportunities, buddy. The more I dig into it, the more opportunities I have, and fortunately, though, the more practice I give it with the tools, and the quicker that I can breathe and do a cancellation of a goal there and let that go. But it fires off pretty rapidly. So to have the tools is essential. And it's kind of a catch 22. You know, you start using the tools, more comes up, you use the tools.
It
works great. Yeah.
So it's sort of a healing 22.
Exactly. Healing 22. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. Well, very powerful. Very powerful. I think, as more people jump on board, critical mass is in the offing. Things are moving forward.
I'd like to ask a question again on this the latest version of the worksheet. is when I'm going through this 5C, I ask to be shown a time when I have not fulfilled. I get a little confused on that.
Okay. So if I look back at my goal in number 3 and I wanted, this person to be more loving with me, that's my goal for them, the goal I'm working with on this sheet. So then in 6C, having canceled the goal in number 5, asked Rooker for support, and then detailed how I feel and how the situation looks, that's 6A and B, then in 6C, I'm asking myself, is there a time when I haven't been loving with myself or someone else? And then make note of it. And what the effect of that I've found, and that one, again, came through my own personal experience, was that when I was able to look at a time when I didn't perfectly live up to the standard I wanted somebody else, why aren't they being loving with me? When I looked at a time when I wasn't living up to that, what I found was that as I saw that, oh, gee, I'm not so perfect, and I the perfection that I'm inviting from them or insisting with them, I don't have, then what tends to happen is you open a bigger space of compassion. And, of course, compassion is another human attribute along with the presence of love, human life, that just opens healing. You know, if you look at the whole Buddhist tradition, it's all about compassion, and this is this one's geared toward opening that compassionate space. So does that click? Does that make sense?
Yes. In fact, that's right in alignment with what was going on with me as I had engaged in this this latest round of work with you, is that I think I shared with you how I had an understanding of my a deeper understanding of these infantile goals that I had that are related to my unresolved or whatever, this childhood goals that are unachieved would be the word. And then that helps this one to tie in directly. That's exactly what you were just saying on this. This is my another one of my unfulfilled potentially infantile goals. You know that. I'm trying to work with, and what that is also doing at the same time in talking and working on this subject is open up the compassion that I can see more of the child of every person that I'm working with, and know that if they're in some form of hostility and fear, it's a high probability I'm not really talking to that person. I'm talking to this hologram of their childhood or of a child.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Right on track.
All right.
And of course, most people are big enough to be the space for the child, where they may not be for an adult that looks like they should know better. And you know, they're in an adult body; they should have it all handled. And
exactly.
Of course, if I have a goal for everybody else or somebody else to have it all handled, then I have to ask myself, when have I not played my life like I haven't had it all handled? And I have to acknowledge it one too many times.
That's right.
So, it's definitely a process. So, well, I look forward to you gathering in this support group tonight and what it opens for you and what happens. So keep me posted.
I'll keep everybody posted. Thanks, Michael.
Appreciation. Blessings. Give Mama a hug.
Bye-bye. Okay, we'll do it.
646-200-4169. That's the call-in number. We'd love to hear your voice. What thoughts do you have? How can we support you? Michelle, anything happening in the chat room?
Not right now, so feel free to press 1. Meanwhile, I wondered if you wanted to give me some feedback on the concepts related to reward and punishment. It seems like it's a theme that I've become aware of through Rex's feedback related to expecting a, reward for doing the worksheets, or that, that's what motivates my utilization of them. And so he seems to think that this, is a huge issue for people. And I've heard him talk about it a lot, but I'd like to hear any thoughts or ideas that you have about both concepts.
Well, if you look at the idea of propitiation, which is kind of a word that isn't used very often in our culture, but T.S. Eliot has a poem, very short, two-line poem that can help us remember what the definition of the word is, what it really means. And Eliot says, "'Tis the highest treason to do the right thing for the wrong reason." So if I have to set myself up a set of punishments or rewards for a behavior that is in harmony with my life purpose and my highest good, then I run the danger of doing the right thing for the wrong reason. And when I do the right thing for the wrong reason, I don't, especially I think that the punishment aspect is probably more harmful than the reward aspect. But if I have been punished and punished and punished and punished because I wasn't doing the right thing, then I tend to grow this huge file on punishment, which of course includes pain and all sorts of disintegrative energy. And every time that that file comes up and motivates my behavior, and I do the right thing because of that, I create more disorder and more disease within my structure by doing the right things. Now, that doesn't mean go off and do the wrong things. It means clean out that part of your mind. But I do the right things for the wrong reason, and I'm resonating that information that was used to abuse me into doing what people around me wanted me to do, rather than them understanding how to teach me how to stay on track and do the right things for the right reason, because then it's health all the way through, rather than I'm doing the right things and resonating all this energy of painful motivation within me. So that's, I think it's really horrendous, like, you know, the whole punishment game. We live in a culture that has a penal system, and people end up in the penal system because they have pain. The people who have pain do crazy things. Sometimes those crazy things have been deemed illegal, validly or invalidly. Sometimes it's just for the business of the prison system, and people end up in there being punished, which, of course, just adds more motivation or more impetus to the right thing for the wrong reason. You know, the guy who's gone out and robbed says, well, gee, they're going to catch me again. I'm going to go back to jail. So I'm not, here's this temptation to rob. I'm not going to rob this person. Now, society might benefit somewhat by this robbery doesn't occur, but the person themselves, if they're refraining from robbery because they're afraid they might get punished, then their refraining from robbery resonates that fear in them, and fear always has a deleterious effect on our structure and on our field. And so, better that we should do some, and we might not say rehabilitation, it might just be habilitation, that we support people in upgrading. You know, if somebody's not safe in the community and they need to go to prison in order for the community to be safe, that's a great thing. That's awesome. But instead of putting them in there to be punished, what if we put them in there to show them where their pain is, where their trauma is, where their healing is, and support them in healing? And then they go out into the world and they do the right things for the right reason. Of course, people who haven't understood, people whose whole lives are doing the right thing for the wrong reason. It's like, you know, a lot of people in the religious world are doing the right things for the wrong reason. They're doing it for fear. You know, and when we do something for fear, then we just created a destructive energy within ourselves or reinforced the destructive energy of fear within us. So let's understand the principles of the universe and how we live within it, how we move within it, and understand how to do the right things for the right reason. So the person looks at someone else's property, and because of the right reason of honor and respect for that person and their property, instead of when the person dropped their wallet saying, well, I'm going to sneak off and empty the wallet and go have myself a good time, they take the wallet, run back and catch the person who dropped it. Right thing for the right reason. and, hey, you lost your property, and I support you in having your property. And when that person does the right thing for the right reason, then the universe is going to hear the message and come in and support them having their property, having what they have by right of consciousness. And so we just create differently in that regard. And to a lesser degree, because it doesn't include the inflicting of pain, but when a child ends up doing the right things because they're going to get a reward instead of understanding how it works, then the tendency is to miss out on a possibility. And so that would be my take on it. Any, is that kind of addressed the arenas you were thinking of, or you and Rex have been talking about, or maybe Rex is on the show and maybe he'd join us?
I'd welcome that. If he presses one, I'll know that he wants to speak. It's a little bit different conversation, but what is resonating for me right now is people, I know a lot of people actually, who operate out of kind of a karma principle, or it could be a reap what you sow, but that, you know, they make their decisions based on, let's say, withholding a negative thought or behavior because they wouldn't want to bring that upon themselves. And so I was just kind of evaluating, well, that would be in a fear base, or would that be doing it for a benevolent reason?
Well, my take would be to go a step beyond that and to recognize that if they're withholding a negative thought because they wouldn't want to do it to themselves, they've already done it to themselves because they've had the negative thought. And so that would be the place to jump in and do some forgiveness and remove the negative thought. So the and then they'd know they'd work through that issue. So when the issue came up again, the situation happened again, and they were able to fill the space with a positive thought. And there was no negativity left in it.
So you're saying that if you did enough work and cleared enough fear and hostility, the choice to have a negative thought would never naturally bubble up anymore?
Correct, yeah. Only what's in you can bubble up, and that's the idea of forgiveness, is to remove what bubbles up. And then you live out of a mind other than carbon-based memory. For those who are new to the show, remember that we've talked about the fact that every thought, every feeling, every reality is stored holographically in every cell in the body. And if you talk to a modern-day physiologist about the body on the level where, you know, people have a belief in bodies, we identify the fact that the base element in the so-called body is carbon, and it's made of 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. And most people are simply stuck cycling the mind energy that's stored within their carbon-based memory system and never go outside of that loop and therefore never really, truly live as human beings. And so carbon-based memory can only shoot up what's in it. There's a great passage in The Course in Miracles that says, you trained it in its testimony, and as it gave it back to you, you convinced yourself that what it saw was true. And so we've trained this carbon-based memory to, you know, all kinds of crazy things. And what we want to be doing is shifting into a different place. And as you do that, everything changes. You can only shoot up what's in it. And I'm just right now, I'm just doing a quick search for that passage in the course. To share that. But does that kind of fit?
I guess I hadn't looked that deeply at the stray thoughts that bubble up, that, you know, it's like a thought comes up, there's a choice to hold or not, and so if you're not holding it, then, you know, that is successful. But I hear you telling me today that the fact that it even bubbled up is indicative of more work to do, and I'm feeling kind of heavy thinking about that.
Yeah, well, then some heavy thoughts are coming up out of carbon-based memory. That's good. it's good. Another layer gets to peel out. But we've trained this carbon-based memory system in how to work. So there's a passage in Course in Miracles that's called Responsibility for Sight. And here's what it says. Let's see. The only thing you need to do for vision, happiness, release from pain, and the escape from all error, all to be given you, is say only this. So there are three lines that are going to follow. It says, you only need to say this. All that will happen. Now, unfortunately, as with many things, there's a little addendum in there. And the addendum is, say only this, but mean it with no reservations. So if a part of the mind stays hidden, there are reservations and there are going to be more layers to come out. But here's what it says. I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience and I decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. Deceive yourself no longer that you are helpless in the face of what is done to you. Acknowledge that you have been mistaken and all effects of your mistakes will disappear. It is impossible that you, a son or daughter of God, be merely driven by events outside of you. It is impossible that happenings come to you that are not your choice. Your power of decision is the determiner of every situation in which you seem to find yourself by chance or accident, and no accident nor chance is possible within the universe, as the Creator created it, outside of which there is nothing. Suffer, and you decided error was your goal. Be happy, and you give the power of decision to Him who must decide for the Creator for you. Begrudge this little offering, withhold it, and you keep the world as now you see it. Give it away, and everything you see goes with it. The world you see, I love this particular passage from the Course. The world you see is but an idle witness that you were right. The witness is insane. You trained it in its testimony, and as it gave it back to you, you listened and convinced yourself that what it saw was true. You did this to yourself. See only this, and you will see how circular the reasoning on which you're seeing rests. This is not what was given to you. So what the Course is saying there is that everything that's gone into carbon-based memory, so every thought that seems to be random isn't so random. They don't just float through the air and land in our minds. Now, there are energies floating in the air that can have an impact on our minds because we have thoughts that are in resonance with them. But when you choose to be responsible for that and apply forgiveness each time another layer comes up, then you get to clear out another layer. And, you know, realize that in 30 generations of your bloodline, there are well over a billion people. And, okay, so I've said I'm going to take on the bloodline and clean it up. Big task. And that's what we're here to support is a world of people who are willing to do that. I love what, I think I mentioned this yesterday, what Jonas Salk said. You know, most important thing to do is be a good ancestor. The Course does go on to say that all that is asked of you is to make room for truth. You are not asked to make or do what lies beyond your understanding. All you're asked to do is let it in. Only stop your interference, and it will happen of itself. Be willing for an instant to leave your altars free of what you placed upon them. And what is really there, you cannot fail to see. What does it take to leave your altars, conscious mind, ancient name, A-L-T-A-R? What does it take to free that? That's what forgiveness is all about. Were you starting to say something there?
Yeah, did you have, because that's all real good information, and it sounds like something that I'd like to meditate and simmer on and read more slowly and thoughtfully. Do you have a citation?
Well, I'm looking at page 265, although I don't know, I'm just looking at electronically. I don't know what
so it's in the text.
But if you just go to Google and put in ACIM and the responsibility for sight. It'll take you right to it. It's in that particular passage.
Oh, so responsibility for sight is the heading.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's good.
And it's really awesome that, you know, we've got Google today so that you can just, you know, ACIM and put in whatever words from the course and it'll just pop right up there. So it's pretty handy. But that's one of my favorite from passages from the course, that responsibility for sight. That's another one that at some point we're going to have to get on video because it's just such a powerful, powerful lesson. That lesson goes on to say, it is as needful that you recognize that you made the world you see as that you recognize that you did not create yourself. They are the same mistake. Nothing created not by your creator has any influence over you. And if you think what you have made can tell you what you see and feel and place your faith in its ability to do so, you are denying your creator and believing that you made yourself. So, in essence, what the course is saying there is that, you know, you've always got the creator's mind to go back to. We live either out of carbon-based memory, out of this, you know, atomic structure made of carbon, 666, and we live in the mind of information firing. If I say don't think about the color of your car, what fires in brain cells, what fires out of carbon-based memory. But there is another mind to live in, and that is the mind of your true being, the mind of love, which was also in the ancient teachings, and it's not a religious idea, the mind of Christ, which means clear channel to the creator, clear channel to the divine. That mind is in you all the time. Which mind do you listen to? One mind makes decisions. You know, if I say don't think about the color of your car, most people, and I say, well, now what do you think about? Most people say, well, I'm thinking about the color of my car. When in fact, there's no thinking involved in that process at all. If I take a middle C tuning fork and I hit it on a desk and I put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork, the second middle C tuning fork starts to vibrate. Is the second tuning fork thinking? In no way, shape, or form. It's just pure resonance. If I say, don't think of the color of your car, is anybody who says I'm thinking about the color of my car actually thinking, or is it just pure resonance? I set up a frequency with my voice, the ear receives the frequency, the eardrum moves, and brain cells fire. That's just resonance. And whenever resonance happens, that's defined as a decision. So there is a decision within carbon-based memory for everything we will ever face. If I face my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, I have decisions in carbon-based memory that say, look, this is what we do in this situation. Oh, if they're being agreeable, we do this. If we're being disagreeable, we do that. If the stress is up and the chips are down, we do this. Here's the power person dynamic. Here's boop, 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 boop. It's all automatic decision. This carbon-based memory system is a decision-making machine, and it's got a decision for everything that will ever happen to you. And so, anyone who lives out of the decision-making machine is dead because all they're doing is replaying past dynamics. One of my early mentors used to say 700 million people live and die every century and never know they've lived. So the idea is to develop the five smooth stones of David, and David is symbolic. You know the whole David and Goliath story. Goliath is simply symbolic of this non-being carbon-based memory system with its decisions that seems like it has an ironclad will. You know, if my power person dynamic and if my family dynamic is when the stress is up and the chips are down, I go into rage and I puke on somebody, it doesn't matter how many times I start to exercise choice and I say, well, I am love, you are love, so forevermore I'm going to be loving with you. That's what I say. And I've started to use one of the stones of David, the one of choice, the spiritual faculty of choice. Decisions are the cheap copy of choice. And so if I say, from now on, no matter what happens, I'm going to be loving with you, and then I do that, right? I mean, if you've ever done that with somebody, you know that then you follow through 100%, right? Not in a million years. you're loving until the next time that person gives you the look, and then what happens? Up comes the old decisions out of carbon-based memory, takes over. That's Goliath. And Goliath seems to have this ironclad will that I don't care what you choose to do, we're going to do what I've got structured in me. And that's kind of like the survival machine that comes from the power person dynamic. But when we awaken to the fact that we have a spiritual faculty, the truth of our being, the human being that is love, has a faculty called choice, then when my mind comes up with hostility in a situation, I can choose to bring love into that situation. I can choose to apply forgiveness and remove my hostility, remove that aspect of Goliath. And then when the stress is up and the chips are down, I'll be loving in that situation because I've cleaned Goliath out of all the hostility and fear. Now, if you recognize that you come from, which most of us do, a thousand generations of, you know, when the stress is up and the chips are down, what do the people of my bloodline do with each other? Oh, they puke on each other. Well, sometimes they puke more gently than others, sometimes more nicely than others. But they make sure that the other knows that there's something wrong with them when they're not doing what, you know, fulfilling the goals that are wanted. And so how many times is Goliath going to come up with that puking machine? It's the decision-making process. It's ongoing. It's in carbon-based memory. It floats all kinds of thoughts about, well, when the stress is up and the chips are down, what I do is attack this other person and let them know what's wrong with them and how I'm going to beat them into submission and make them do the right thing for the wrong reason. That's all decision. That's all Goliath. Choice says, whoops, you know, when this person didn't do what I wanted it to do, up came my hostility, my fear, my grief, my guilt, my rage, my pain. And so instead of focusing on them and talking about them, about how they make me angry, they make me feel guilty, I'm going to stop. I'm going to, through choice, change the conversation. Ah, my guilt is up. Did they make me guilty? Nah, I've been through this guilt 87 different times with 42 different people. Here it is. This is my guilt. So now instead of denial, talking about them, thinking about them, I'm going to speak about myself. Gee, here is my guilt, and here is my desire to abuse coming up. I want to turn on them and just make sure they know what they did that was wrong, and make sure in the future they do the right thing just because I want them to, which, of course, is for the wrong reason. And so choice says, I'm going to do my work. I'm going to clean out this puke. I'm going to clean out this generational pattern of jumping on down somebody's throat, of, you know, functioning out of hostility fear. I'm going to forgive, forgive, forgive. How many times might I do it? Well, somebody said 77 times 70, an infinite number of times till I'm complete. And then when I'm finished with that, there's no free-floating thought of hostility towards someone when they're not fulfilling my goals. I stand as a space of love. I may have some resistance come up, and that'll be my next piece of work. And my next piece of work, until there's nothing left in my carbon-based memory that robs me of my spiritual faculty or my awareness of myself as love, then I'm going to step forward and function in this space as love. And that's the process. And in my experience, in order for people to really get a handle on that and appreciate that and really move forward with that, the starting point after having been introduced to this work is about the 5-year point. And then at 10 years, people are starting to click with it and move it and get it. Are you breathing?
Oh, I wish you could see my face.
Man.
I feel
come
like
on, can't we just take a pill and do this the easy way? I was talking with someone the other day. Actually, a gentleman who was at the workshops in Asheville, and he stepped forward with some supportive information and wants to help us out with some things, and he's into kind of technology and machines, and he was sharing with me, well, but you know, certainly we can make a machine that will fix all of this, and then this person will just, you know, they won't have any diseases and everything will be good, and, you know, they'll be enlightened, and there's got to be a machine, and you know, we're going back and forth with, no, you got to do your work. Well, yeah, but, you know, technology, it's all frequency, so we can come up with this frequency device that will fix it, all right? It's like, no, you got to do your work. Well, yeah, but, you know, I've seen people with diseases, and I have this machine, and it helps to clear this stuff out, and see, and their lives get better. It's like, yeah, but you got to do your work. It's, yeah, but there's a... I finally said, well, okay, let me give you an example. I want to win the World Weightlifting Championship next December. So, Michelle, here's my plan. You go into the gym 3 times a day until December and work out for me. And then I'll go to the World Championship and I'll win the championship. And at that point, he kind of grinned and realized the folly of his conversation. The machine's going to give us that kind of strength and power in terms of our spiritual beingness. No, everybody has to work for their process and their awakening. Nobody can do it. I mean, you know, somebody can have paved the road for us and said, here, I'll take your hand and I'll help you along the road. But everybody's going to do their own work if they're going to acquire the spiritual skills involved in, you know, in doing any process in their lives. It's just, it's part of it. And when you recognize how long humanity has, by and large, not totally, but by and large, been in such deep darkness. I mean, you know, look at the fact that we've murdered 175 million people on the planet in the last 70 years. It's like, hello, wake up. Take a look at what corporate America's doing with, you know, these GMOs and the glycophosphates that they know cause cancer, and they're selling it, and they're spraying it on fields, and they're spraying it on farm workers, and just, you know, I mean, how bizarre, how insane is that? And on, and I mean, we could do a whole litany of things of the insane mind. How long has it been going? You know, there's a song out a few years. How long has this been going on? How long has it been going on in your bloodline? How long has it been going on in mine? Well, as far as I can establish, I can't find anybody truly sane functioning as a human being in my bloodline. Truly, fully functioning as a human being. And I include myself in that. I can't find anybody. So, now that I realize it's possible, I'm going to go into the gym and I'm going to work out. Because everything my mind gives me, I trained it in its testimony. And as it gave it back to me, I convinced myself that what it saw was true. And I got to start loving truth on a deeper level than that and start to realize that if it's not based in love, then it's not truth. And I got to love truth enough to go for actual truth.
Michael, did you hit your mute?
No, I'm just holding the space.
Wow.
Good breath.
Are you familiar with the SCIO machine?
The WHO machine?
Yeah, SCIO. It's a company actually out of Saginaw, Michigan. They have, I'm listening to you and my mind's like, yeah, but. So anyways, I appreciate what you're saying. And I know that it's, you know, one layer at a time, one disintegrative energy at a moment. And it's a journey, and that you can't storm the gates.
You can't storm the gates. It takes doing your work. And are there things that can support us? Oh, absolutely. I think there's some awesome, you know, electronic equipment up there. You know, I go back to 30 some years ago when Marcel Vogel brought the Delaware camera to the in fact, this fellow that I was just talking about was at that conference back 30 years ago. He shared with me, but he brought this Delaware camera that takes a picture of high energy waves that leave the mind with a thought. There's a piece of technology that's just given us awesome insight. And is there technology? There are scanning machines out there that can scan the body for disease frequencies, help to create antidotes to those frequencies and such. But those machines aren't going to change the basic mind energy we engage in and create our lives with. That's up to us. Go see the movie Chappie.
Say that again, Chatter?
Chappie. Chappie, C-H-A-P-I-E or P-P-I-E.
Oh, okay.
It's really
yeah.
cute. It's a movie about, you've probably seen previews if you go to the movies at all, and I think it's currently in theaters still. It's probably on Netflix, I don't know, but it's about a guy who creates artificial intelligence. He creates this machine, and he ends up stealing a robot from the company he works for. He works for this robot company, and he takes the robot intelligence to a whole new level where it becomes self-thinking. And so he's its creator, and it's really kind of cute the way it plays out, because this machine is just like a little kid, and because it's a robot that has power and all sorts of things, there's some quote-unquote bad guys who steal it, and they want to use it for their uses. And so the robot, though, now that it is self-aware, is like a little child. And the guy who created it is trying to give this Chappie, this robot, a conscience and care and concern and understanding how to do the right things for the right reason. And these quote-unquote bad guys who are thieves want him to go steal for them. And so they're telling him that, you know, stealing is good. We'll be better off and everything will be good. And so Chappie questions this, and then all of a sudden the guy who created it, you know, ends up showing up where these thieves are with this robot, and he says, but I'm your creator. You know, it's a whole creator conversation. I'm your creator, and I say, no, you don't steal. That's not right. And so he's trying to, you know, so you see this argument between right and wrong. There's an interesting line in it because, you know, there's a brainwash in the culture that says, well, you know, everything's cool the way it is. You just accept it and just go along with it. And that's kind of the thing that distinction that's put into this movie as the quote-unquote bad guys, you know, they kind of come to like this robot, form a relationship, especially this woman who kind of almost becomes like the robot's mother. And when the creator who has a conscience comes along and says, no, you've got to act right. You don't steal from people, even though these people, and this, what the robot says, but this is my mother. She wouldn't steer me wrong. It's like, well, no, you have to go the right path. And the one of the quote unquote bad guy, one of the bad guys says something to the effect, well, you know, you got to just let him make his own decisions, just like a lot of people are saying with kids. Oh no, you don't tell your kids what direction they should go. You just have to let them make their own decisions. It's like, yeah, and if I don't give this new child instructions, they're going to take your instructions because you're standing there saying, oh, don't tell them which way to go, so that you can tell them which way to go and get them to go where you want them to. It's like, no, we have to instill an ethic into our children. As parents, we have a responsibility for that. And if we don't, then, you know, somebody's going to fill their minds with something. Somebody's going to steer them. Because unfortunately, the world doesn't support people in being awake and making real choices. People buy into belief systems and ways of thinking, and most of them are insane. They're just off base. And if they're not keyed into the active presence of love, then the person who buys into that is in trouble until they understand the tools and start to do their work. And I think this would be a great conversation if you want to make note of where we're at with it and any of your thoughts for us to continue tomorrow. But in the meantime, we're almost out of time, so I'm going to close the show out and just say thank you all for being here. Look at Heartland Schedule on our website. Come and join us for some summer intensives. We're delighted you're here. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
things